welcome to the IWC podcast. I am James Borbeth. I am just amazed with how much wrestling news has gone on in the last week. To talk about all of this with me, Chris Walder is joining me as always.
How you doing, James?
I am doing all right. A lot of wrestling news to cover. This, the least relevant, I watched TNA once again for the first time in months. So long since I last watched TNA, MVP was not part of the company back then. Boy, oh boy, was that a mistake.
Yeah, TNA's really going full speed ahead right now. I mean, last night, Eric Young becomes the TNA World Heavyweight Champion. Of all people, I mean, he was one half of the women's tag team champions not too long ago. I can't believe he's in that top spot.
Yes, and, you know, hey, a bearded guy winning a title. And, oh, by the way, TNA's fans, they own the show just like the WWE, the fans own the show. I'm begging TNA, you know what? Come up with an original idea. That's all I'm saying. Until they do, I'm not talking about TNA on this show ever again. So that was your minute and 15 seconds of TNA news on this podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. There's a lot more relevant stuff to talk about this week. However, Daniel Bryan did win the world title, as almost everyone thought going into WrestleMania. But coming out of WrestleMania and the week after, that is the third biggest story in professional wrestling. I don't think anyone would argue with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this has been such a hectic week for the company. I mean, we had the Hall of Fame on the weekend, WrestleMania on Sunday. They followed that up with an amazing Monday Night Raw. And then we had an unfortunate passing with someone who was actually inducted into the Hall of Fame on the weekend. And that kind of all pushes the Daniel Bryan title win to the side, at least for now.
And we'll talk about these topics with our guest, Jason Agnew, as well. But want to get your thoughts, and I'll share some of mine. I guess we'll start with the Ultimate Warrior and his untimely passing. I got to be honest, as I said in the interview with Jason Agnew, I first saw this on Twitter. I honestly thought it was a bad Twitter joke and came to realize it was no joke and just such an eerie thing with all that went on. I mean, the Ultimate Warrior and this company had fought for well over a decade, probably closer to two decades, where they were not on the same page. Paul Levesque, Triple H, finally makes this happen, and literally on the way home from that event in New Orleans, the Ultimate Warrior, hours later, is dead.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I think it hits closer to home because we just saw him on Raw the previous night cutting a promo to his fans. He put on the face mask, and he's like, he was just thanking everyone for all of their support, and He had actually signed a three-year deal with a company. He was going to be kind of an ambassador. He was going to be making appearances. And, I mean, personally, I'm kind of glad that he was able to reconcile some of these differences with some of his former colleagues, and that puts a smile on my face in such a dark time. But, I mean, like you said, there's been so many jokes in the past over the Ultimate Warrior, like, dying. Is he around anymore? No one's seen him for such a long time. And you're right, I didn't believe it either when I first saw it on Twitter, but it wasn't until Triple H had posted something on his account, and even then I thought it was hacked, that I finally started to believe, wow, the Ultimate Warrior, someone we had seen predominantly featured on WWE programming the last 3 days, is dead, and that's terrible.
And, you know, he comes out there with his young daughters, and, you know, this hit home close to home to me, because his oldest daughter is about the age I was, and he's about the age my father was when he passed away. So that's the main thing to me. I was never a big Ultimate Warrior fan. We're not going to get into all the things that he didn't do right in this business, but they're out there. But just for his daughters, his wife, I just feel terrible. And then another part of me, who is a diehard Randy Savage fan, if you've listened to this podcast, you probably know that because I usually do an imitation out of respect to the news of the week. None of that this week. But, you know, Randy Savage never got that moment. And it kind of hit home that, you know, it's really sad that Randy didn't, because he deserved it just as much as the Ultimate Warrior, if not more.
And I think this coming Monday night on Raw, they're going to have a tribute show to the Ultimate Warrior. I don't know if it's going to be kind of along the lines of what they did with guys who were actually active on the roster, like Eddie Guerrero and Owen Hart, but you're certainly going to be seeing a lot of footage, a lot of his old matches and promos. I think they're still going to go ahead with the show as far as pushing storylines and whatnot. But yeah, this Monday night, Ultimate Warrior tribute show, I think it's fitting. I mean, considering we had just seen him on TV, and this was like big news around the world. A lot of people, a lot of news outlets were picking this up. So good on the WWE for that.
Yeah, we'll see how far they go with it, though, because I think you set a dangerous precedent if you do that, because then it'll be you're starting to value death in some way, you know what I mean? Because what if Hulk Hogan dropped dead 2 weeks from now? Are we going to do another show because Hulk Hogan dropped dead? Yeah, probably. He's significant enough, I would think so. And then it becomes that judgmental thing. Were you big enough to deserve the tribute show? And I just don't want to see that.
I think it has more so to do with the fact that he was just one of the headlining guys at the Hall of Fame of the biggest show of all time, arguably. And he's fresh in the minds of fans, even fans who didn't really follow him when he was an active competitor. I think a lot of the younger audience now knows who the Ultimate Warrior is. And, I mean, like I said, I don't think they're going to go too overboard, but I think you're going to see quite a bit of Warrior footage on Raw this Monday.
We'll see. We'll talk about it once it's happened. I don't want to judge it before it does happen. Before all of this, the big story was the worked angle of The Undertaker and his streak, which died at WrestleMania. And boy, oh boy, before we get into the significance of that, you got to give me some credit. I called that match to a T, did I not? It was a terrible match.
I'll give you a pat on the back for that. But, I mean, a lot of people didn't think that Lesnar Undertaker was going to be like a 4 or 5 star classic, especially considering the build-up. I thought they were just going to kind of work as well as they could considering the circumstances. You know, Undertaker's up there in age, and Brock Lesnar's not the greatest in-ring competitor I've ever seen, but yeah, thank God for that ending, because otherwise we'd be talking about that as one of the worst streak matches in quite some time.
Well, it was a terrible match, and it was the exact match I thought it would be. It was a lot of map-based stuff. There was a lot of MMA-based stuff. We find out afterwards the Undertaker had got a concussion early on in that match, but I still think that was how the match was laid out to be. I don't think a lot changed based on the fact he got a concussion. I think that's the match they had planned, and it just wasn't a good-looking match in any way, shape, or form. And then, you know, you could tell, like, go back a year prior, people bit on the false finishes for CM Punk. Brock Lesnar, no one bit. Mm-hmm. No one bit at all on any of those false finishes, to the point when the actual finish came, people were stunned. They couldn't believe it.
But that's what Undertaker matches at WrestleMania have basically come down to. It's not really, they're not the greatest matches. I mean, with all due respect to guys like Shawn Michaels and Triple H, those were really good matches. But as of late, it's all about the false finishes, and who can kick out of the tombstone, and how many finishers can The Undertaker kick out of. And, I mean, we reported at the site I write for, WrestlingRumors.net, that the referee wasn't even aware that The Undertaker was going to lose that match. Apparently all referees are told, no matter what, just count to three. If they don't put their shoulder up, then whatever will be, will be. He was shocked. Apparently only a couple of people backstage, like the Triple H's and the McMahons of the world, knew what was going to happen. When I was watching that match live, I've never been as legitimately shocked at a result of a match as I was over that. I always felt so long ago that if The Undertaker was going to leave, it would be at WrestleMania 30. I thought that it was like a nice round number. It's a big pay-per-view. He can just walk off into the sunset after that. But as soon as I found out that it was Brock Lesnar, I started to doubt it, because there's no way they're going to give the most storied streak ever to a guy who's only a part-time competitor. But then when Brock Lesnar hit that third F5, in the back of my head I was like, okay, Undertaker can't kick out of three of these, right? And then when the referee's hand hit the mat for the third time, I was still blown away.
Yeah, it was just an amazing moment. And of course, it made one fan very famous. Although I tend to question this now, because apparently this fan, the Undertaker shock guy, he actually had been part of the WWE before. He lost a bunch of weight and did this interview thing with Triple H. I'm starting to wonder if these people are plants now. I'm not believing in Brock Lesnar guy anymore and sign guy. I think they might be relatives of people.
Yeah, they're probably all under contract to the company or something. They're there far too often, and they're always on camera. But yeah, that guy, there was a lot of outlets picked up like these these immediate reactions to like how fans were like, oh my goodness, the Undertaker lost, I can't believe it. Like jaws were hitting the floor, hands were on people's head. I even had a couple of people from the site I write for that went to New Orleans and were there in person. They saw people leaving after the Undertaker had lost because they were like so offended and they bought into this so much. Now that's a little too far.
There was men crying, holding each other like it was a funeral. It was crazy.
Like come on.
You know, I kind of get it though, because it's like you got to understand this is like 22 years of people's lives. Like a lot of things probably flash through people's heads who are older that have lived that streak from the beginning to the end. But still, the reaction was just eerie and something. We'll never see anything like that in wrestling again.
Yeah, and I mean, Daniel Bryan won the championship, but 5 to 10 years from now, we're going to remember WrestleMania 30 as the night the streak ended.
Well, I think we'll remember it for Daniel Bryan as well, depending on where Daniel Bryan's career goes. Yeah. I think another one of those moments from WrestleMania that we'll probably remember, depending on how his career goes, is Cesaro and that slam of the Big Show over the top rope in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which we were so skeptical heading into. But I thought, in all honesty, I loved how that match played out. I thought it worked out great.
Yeah, they went with the right guy. If I had known Cesaro was in there, I probably would have gone with him. I mean, I believe you and I had the same pick. We kind of assumed that it was going to be Alexander Rusev, who wasn't even in the match to begin with. But when the final two were Big Show and Cesaro, it was all but guaranteed Cesaro was going to go over. They did the right thing. This is someone that the WWE has a lot of stock in. The fans are over with. The fans love this guy. I mean, that giant swing of his in-ring work, that uppercut. I mean, the guy's a total package. And now on Monday Night Raw...
We're going to get to that after we're done with our interview. So save that bit.
Oh, okay.
But yes, Monday Night Raw was also another big night for Cesaro. We'll get into that later. But obviously, when you combine the two nights, a guy that the WWE certainly sees a big and bright future for him. The one thing that was surprising, the Bray Wyatt and John Cena match, I thought the match was good. I didn't think the people were into it as much as I thought they'd be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to look back on that match as more as kind of like the ring psychology of Bray Wyatt and the way he was working over the fans. The match wasn't terrible. I thought Bray Wyatt was going to go over, but later in the night with Lesnar going over Taker, there's only a certain amount of heels you want to go over. I think Bray Wyatt still looked good. John Cena winning doesn't surprise anyone anymore. I mean, the Superman, he defies all the odds all the time. That entrance of his was so damn good. I mean, I forget the name of the band. I think it's like Crozer or something. But when they had like those masks on and then the singer had like his face painted as a skull, that was so damn cool. I love the Wyatt family right now, man.
Yeah, and the crowd was into the Wyatts. But I think with the psychology of that match, that was one of those matches you were almost better off being at home and getting the feed of the broadcast, and you get more into it, because how it started with Wyatt yelling at Cena like to hit him when he was down. I mean, some of that stuff doesn't translate as well when you're watching, especially in a big venue like that where there's 75, 80,000 people. They're just little blips on a screen. You can't notice those little details in a match like that, and I think that might have hurt this match in the reaction being not as huge as I think people expected it to be.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't a bad match. I agree with you. It was probably better to just sit at home and watch it and appreciate the little nuances of what they were doing. But yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of WrestleMania 30, there was so many more monumental things that happened, but that's not to take away from what Wyatt and Cena did.
No, I think the match was fine. In fact, a general theme on this WrestleMania that I liked, we told a lot of stories on this WrestleMania. I thought we had good stories throughout with all the different matches. Daniel Bryan, the ongoing story of his injured shoulder, had the great match with Triple H that I think everyone expected. Stephanie doing a remarkable job as the heel slash wife of Triple H. And then how they ended that match with Triple H taking the steel chair to Daniel Bryan's injured shoulder. All brilliant. and then to keep that selling going into the final match. And I thought the one thing that didn't get nearly enough love with all that happened on this WrestleMania, I thought it was brilliant how Hunter and Stephanie came out with Scott Armstrong. We had all but forgot about that. I mean, we give the WWE a heck of a lot of flack for not remembering their own storylines. Well, there was one that happened a long time ago, and here comes Scott Armstrong in to be the evil heel ref. And I thought that I popped for that huge because I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
It's the little things. And, yeah, I can't believe that WWE actually remembered of this whole Scott Armstrong situation. But, again, that just it goes to show the amount of detail they put into this show. And top to bottom, WrestleMania 30, a pay-per-view that I wasn't nearly as excited about as some because I wasn't really appreciating the build-ups of some of these feuds. But, wow, I mean, in all of the WrestleManias in history, this is definitely, personally, in my top three. I loved the show. There wasn't really a huge negative. I mean, if you really want to nitpick, you can kind of say, hey, well, you know, Shield and Outlaws and Kane didn't go too long, and the Divas Invitational was kind of a joke. But even that wasn't that bad. So, yeah, WWE, you deserve a round of applause. They put on one heck of a show in New Orleans.
Actually, I'm going to stick up for the Divas match because I think they were just dead. Like, they were dead before they came out there because of the spot they were in after that Undertaker and the streak ending. But they actually worked a decent match. I think we saw some stuff from people that I, quite frankly, wasn't expecting. And Sarah Del Rey working with all these girls, you're starting to see some of the fruits of the labors of that. But that being said, when we get to talking about where the Divas title is heading and all of that later on, I think we will have a much clearer direction of things, and it doesn't involve anyone in that match other than the person that won it, which was AJ Lee retaining her title, moving on to Monday Night Raw the next night. But basically speaking, I think we're both in agreement. Two thumbs up on WrestleMania 30. They really pulled it off and did a great job.
Yeah, great show. I loved it. I wish I could go back and watch it again. Honestly, it was that good. I was always a fan of WrestleMania 17, and I think WrestleMania 19 is underrated, but 30's right up there. It was that good.
It was. For me, it's top five. It can move up or down depending on the history that ends up becoming of it, because I think some of the matches on this show will get treated differently depending on how history plays out. But we shall see. That kind of segues in nicely to our guest this week. An institution with its own history is Live Auto Wrestling, and had the chance to chat with Jason Agnew about the two major stories of this week, with that being the end of the Undertaker streak and the sad passing of the Ultimate Warrior. Also get into some history on the Law and all the guys that are a part of that, and just some good old-fashioned wrestling talk with Jason Agnew, one of the co-hosts of The Law, so I think people will enjoy that one.
Perfect, man. I can't wait to hear it. Let's hear what you and Jason have to say.
Here we are on the IWC podcast. Another week, another great guest. And back a little while ago in Savage's Condo on the Moon, which hosts the IWC podcast, I talked about all the different podcasts I like and enjoy. And it really started with The Law, Live Audio Wrestling, which has been around since the late 90s, and I have been a fan of it in its many forms and fashions, and I am thrilled to have one of the co-hosts of that show as my guest this week, Jason Agnew. Jason, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me on, James, and thanks for your loyal listenership through the years and all our various incarnations in Toronto radio. We are indeed the sluts of the AM dial in Toronto radio.
You have been many, many places on that dial and on the internet and all through it, and I guess let's just start there. I mean, this show has survived through so much, and we always talk about wrestling having its ebbs and flows, but this show has been able to maintain itself, and I think that's a credit to all the people that work on it and just your dedication and loyalty to doing it.
You're absolutely right, because, listen, there were a lot of years where we were not even getting paid for doing The Law. It was just a labor of love for us, and there, you know, any station that we're on will bring in the listeners, but the fact of the matter is pro wrestling has a stigma attached to it, no matter what you say, you know. The first thing, when you say pro wrestling, people are like, oh, that stuff? You know, to those who don't know who aren't fans. And the constant challenge we have is, yes, we'll bring in listeners. Yes, we have a loyal following all across the world. But the problem is, what type of station do we fit on? Like, we can say a sports station, and believe me, we're happy with our home on TSN Radio right now. The fact of the matter is, there's some sports guys out there who hate professional wrestling, who think it's garbage. And there are other guys who grew up with it. You know, and those are the guys I love chatting with, but it all depends on the program director and the mandate of the station that sometimes they don't feel like wrestling should be combined with any of these other sports. And if we're not on a sports station, then do we work on a talk station? That's kind of a hard thing as well. I always found our best home was, pardon me, was back in the days of Mojo Radio when we were on AM 640 for, when it was Mojo Radio, and it was a guy talk station. That was our best home. It was a format that was fun. It was great. And it was kind of like the Spike TV of radio. And we were really pushed and we were embraced by that station. And, you know, don't get me wrong, we do well at TSN. And I love the fact that now John has a second show there being the MMA report. But there are still those sports guys who are kind of like, oh, wrestling, what the hell's that doing here?
Yeah, and I'm one of those guys who... I've come over, started to do the wrestling blog, but I've covered the Toronto Raptors for 6 years, and you have the people that you mention wrestling to, and they're all into it, and the other people kind of give you a strange look, and like, well, you're covering basketball in the NBA, how the heck can you like that stuff?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing was, a real telltale sign with that is I find when John and I have traveled to a few UFC events, I mean, we cover the ones here, but we also were just recently in San Antonio and Dallas. We went to see UFC 171 in Dallas, and it was a couple weeks after the WWE Network launched. And I'm sitting in a row with a whole bunch of other reporters that I don't know, but they're just from, you know, around the Dallas area, have traveled there. And I overheard someone going, I had to buy it. I really just wanted to see Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and I wanted to see Brock fall on his head. It was only $10, right? So that was happening down the aisle. And then I turned to the gentleman beside me, and we were talking about what was the Jake Shields fight that was on, where I think Jake Shields and Hector Lombard were fighting, and the referee stood them up. And I was talking to this guy. I'm like, the referee is the most over guy in this match. And he's like, you're right, and you've just revealed to me that you're a professional wrestling fan by using the term over. I'm like, oh, yeah, I am indeed. I cover everything. I do a show called The Law. And he's like, what? That's you? And we started a great chat. Turns out this guy's from New Orleans, covers MMA, but is a huge fan of professional wrestling. So there's definitely a crossover there, no matter what people say. And it's funny because I think this network that the WWE has just put out has brought some of those old fans back in if they've caught wind of it, because for $10 they can go and watch all their childhood memories.
And that leads to two of the questions I was going to ask later, but I'm going to ask them now, seeing as you brought the topics up. The first one, at some point, The Law made a decision to include MMA in what they did, and I admit, I was one of those people that said, why the heck are they talking about this mixed martial arts stuff? I have grown to love mixed martial arts since,
yep.
But at the time, was that a tough decision for you guys to make? Because obviously, things have changed a lot between the relationship between MMA and wrestling. I mean, you have Ronda Rousey out there with her four horsewomen, and I think that base has grown dramatically of crossover fans, but at the time you guys started doing it, I don't think it was there yet.
Full credit to Jeff Merrick, you know, our former host and producer and one of the creators of The Law, for doing that. Jeff always saw mixed martial arts as a big part of professional wrestling, where professional wrestling had its roots, you know, and at that time when he started covering, Pride was going, UFC was going, bit of the dark ages as far as UFC went, when John McCain tried to push them out of pay-per-view. But Jeff always wanted to cover that. He had been a fan right from the very beginning and was like, guys, we're going to cover this. And at that time, it was probably, you know, 1999, 2000. I didn't have a say. I didn't know anything about it, but started watching it a little bit later on and have come to be a big fan. I very much enjoy it. And there's definitely an audience that's a crossover. And yes, the guys, like you were saying initially, you didn't like it and you didn't understand it, why we were covering it. But, you know, I think that there is a crossover audience, and some people only like MMA, some people only like professional wrestling. Well, that's fine. I mean, a lot of the people listen with a podcast form. Fast forward is my advice to you, because we are going to be covering both. And look at someone like Dave Meltzer, right? Dave Meltzer is the leader in this industry as far as covering these sports and entertainment, and Dave always covered both and provided in-depth coverage of both, even when it was in the dark days. And, you know, we followed suit, so we tried. It's not equal coverage. Like, what would you say our show is? I'd say it's, like, probably 90%, 10%. And as far as leaning towards professional wrestling. And a lot of the reason for that is now, by going to TSN, it was a conscious decision on our part to allow John Pollock to have his own show there and to do separate MMA coverage. So we have our sister show being the MMA Report. And if you want really in-depth stuff, go to the MMA Report. We just kind of skim off the top on the law now.
I forgot to say it. The MMA talk has begun.
Yeah.
The MMA talk has begun. But let's get into all your various cohorts with the law. Obviously, you host with Dan the Mouth Levansky, who has been on that show, I think, from the very beginning. But then
No. Actually, Dan has not been on from the very beginning. The original hosts of the law were Chris Tidwell and Donnie Abreu, and that was in 97. Chris then left, and it was Jeff Merrick and Donnie. Donnie then left, and it was Jeff and Dan. And then it was myself who replaced Jeff on the show when he left off to greener pastures of the hockey world, now involved with Hockey Night in Canada. So, yeah, it's been Mouth and I for probably the longest duration of this show. But he was not there. He actually started about 3 months before I did in 1999.
Okay. But you work with John and Mouth and Way and now recently Braden. It just seems like you guys are a family, and it's really nice to see. And I just thought, the one thing that always sticks out to me, and John Pollock hates praise, I have found this out to be, but when I think of being a fan of this show, and I listened to that first interview he did with Chris Jericho, to what he is doing today, it's truly amazing how far he has come and how well he is doing.
John is absolutely incredible. You know, he's a very good friend of mine. I was in his wedding party and such. And to watch what's happened with John, I mean, I met him when he was, I think, 16 or so. And he came to me a few years later asking about radio and television arts because I had graduated from the program. And he was like, can you give me any help with this? So, I mean, I helped him with his essay, you know, trying to get into RTA. And then to watch him go through RTA, start working for the Fight Network, being an intern there, you know, into being, you know, a reporter, and now being one of their main guys. And he's so knowledgeable about wrestling and MMA. He's just an encyclopedia. And he has, you know, we joke about John in regard to his Rain Man tendencies, about his statistical mind, and he has this real ability to take in knowledge, and he's like a sponge and absorb it, and he's great with dates, and he's so knowledgeable, and really he's dedicated, you know, 24/7 of his life to covering wrestling and mixed martial arts. He got married as well, but the majority of it is doing that for his career, and it's incredible. He does things that I am unable to do as far as his statistical knowledge and ability to break down fights and look at these two sports. He's quite brilliant.
And is the driving force behind expanding the law beyond just the Sunday show. I mean, you guys do podcasts almost every day now, and most of those feature John and Way doing their thing, but also you recently started one on NXT with yourself and Braden Harrington, which I gotta admit, I'm not into all the stuff you guys are into, but I find it humorous and enjoyable, and I think it's been a great success and a great way for Braden to kind of get that start, just like you guys brought John and Way into the mix. I think you're doing the same with Braden.
That's exactly it. I mean, it kind of started with myself in 1999. I applied to the law when I was a student at RTA, and Jeff and Donnie brought me in, and I started as the technical producer, and then moved my way up to kind of, you know, co-hosting one of the two shows that we had, and then hopped into the co-host chair, and then moved into the host chair, and we moved over to TSN. John's done the same thing, you know, intern, tech producer, and now on to being, you know, our fill-in host on the law, but hosting everything at liveaudiowrestling.com. Way chimes in as well, and at one time was a tech producer for us. And same thing with Braden. So he gets out of school, and, you know, he comes aboard as a tech producer for us and for TSN, and then it's like his goal, his career goal is to be on air. And, you know, we were just talking about it, and I'm like, well, dude, like, think about it. You can go along this same process that John and I have done. Let's get your feet wet. Let's get you doing a podcast and get people to know you and get you on air. And that's the only way that you get better. I mean, you can learn all you can in school, but when it comes right down to it, it's when you start working and when you start doing it, that's when you really start learning.
And his debut interview with Maria Kanellis, you might go experience that, but we will move on to the wrestling news of the week, which has been quite significant. We had in wrestling in 1 week, we had a worked angle that created a huge buzz in news and an actual real life angle that had created buzz in news as well. First, I guess we'll start with the worked one. The Undertaker's streak comes to an end. You expressed your feelings on the Law on Sunday right after the event. Has anything changed about your thoughts about the Undertaker's streak ending and what this all means for WrestleMania and wrestling?
Well, I really like on Monday what they did with Brock Lesnar, and I think that due to Brock's limited schedule, the monster that he is, and it's basically you got a complete reset on his character. No one's going to remember the fact that John Cena beat him or Triple H beat him, because those were horrible booking mistakes on the WWE's part. You have a reset on the Lesnar character, who's only going to show up once in a while and should absolutely destroy people. He should not lose for a long time now. In regards to ending the streak, geez, I don't know. Maybe it's the little kid in me. Maybe it's the guy that always enjoyed thinking, who's Taker going to face this year? I wanted to see him end that streak undefeated. And, okay, I'll bring it up one more time. I wanted to see Undertaker versus Sting. For those of you that listen to The Law, like, I've been talking about that match for more than 5 years now, just to see these two dark characters that we've seen for 15-plus years playing the dark character, who have never been in the same organization, finally collide in what maybe was could have been a retirement match for both of them. I have no interest in that anymore. Nothing. Absolutely nothing, because the streak is no longer on the line, and unless Sting is challenging for the streak, I don't care to see these two old men in the ring. So I'm torn. I think time will tell what they do with Lesnar and whether it was worth ending the streak. And I really think that WWE has also lost a big promotional tool for WrestleMania. WrestleMania does sell itself, but it was always interesting to see what was going to happen with the streak this year, who was going to challenge for it, and they don't have that anymore. So what do you do next year?
But to play devil's advocate, there's been a lot of talk that wrestling is on this upswing, and we've got all this young talent. You can talk about the Wyatts, you can talk about the Shield. You cover NXT, so you know about all the guys down there. Is maybe the fact that this streak is over, maybe is that a symbol to starting a new generation, and maybe this is a way that WrestleMania can stop being about all these guys that are coming in and being these special attractions and being about the actual people on this roster?
Yep, absolutely. I think that you definitely make a good point there. And, you know, you did see this year Rock, Hogan, and Austin starting things off, but really the event itself was focused on new talent, and they tried to get Cesaro played a big role this year, and I love what they're doing with him. Daniel Bryan finally got his moment at the end, which, well, people kind of forgot about due to the other circumstances surrounding this week. And then on Monday night, actually, you saw more attention be put on new debuts. You had Paige come up, despite the fact that that was an awful debut. She's there. And then Bo Dallas and Adam Rose have got vignettes going as well. So, hey, let's hope it is pushing that way. Oh, and not to mention the fact that you now have your main event, which is focused on Daniel Bryan and The Shield, and against, you know, your old guard of the Evolution guys. So I think maybe you make a good point there, and the end of the streak means it is pushing towards more new stars at WrestleMania rather than looking back to the past. And that was always a huge criticism that we had of the WWE. When they needed a big buy rate, they wouldn't look forward, they'd look back, and that's a huge mistake.
And the other big news of the week is some sad news, which unfortunately we get far too much in wrestling, about someone passing away. But the circumstances of this one, just absolutely eerie. The Ultimate Warrior, sorry, he comes back to the WWE. They finally mend fences after over a decade or more of feuding with one another. He goes in the Hall of Fame. He has that moment. He's even on Raw and cuts just an eerie promo. If you go back and look at the text of that,
yeah.
And then we find the news on Tuesday that he has passed away and died. I was stunned when I heard it. When I first saw this on Twitter, I literally thought it was a bad Twitter joke.
Yep.
It was no joke.
Nope. I thought the exact same thing as you. I mean, you know, he did not look good on Raw. Let's be honest here. He was limping to the ring and was very, you know, breathing heavy, etc. But, you know, he's an older gentleman. He was 54, and I guess if you're going to tug on the ropes like that, maybe you do get blown up. But it's a terrible situation. Not necessarily for, you know, the wrestling aspect of it, but, you know, if you notice Warrior at the Hall of Fame, he's got a 13-year-old and 11-year-old daughter. And he loved those girls. He brought them up on stage with them. He has a much younger wife who he pointed to in the crowd as well. And it just seems like a guy who was able to step away from professional wrestling and, you know, make a life of his own and very much became a family man. And it's really tragic that he passes away from what looks to be a heart attack, I would guess. That's not confirmed as of yet. It's just been deemed a catastrophic event that he suffered and basically passed away instantly. What can you say? You know, absolutely eerie in regards to the promo that he cut on Monday. It was like he was giving himself a eulogy. And the timing is so bizarre to have any sort of bright side of this whatsoever. I would just say at least they mended fences and he got to say his piece. Publicly, he made the speech at the Hall of Fame. He said what he had to say. Fans will now hopefully not look at the Ultimate Warrior as, okay, he was a bit of a crazy dude, right? He danced to the beat of his own drummer. But at least remember him for the childhood hero they remember, and then perhaps a guy that was a family man in the end that was taken from us too soon.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, the fact of his daughters, that connected with me because my father passed away right at about the time that his oldest daughter, her age right now. And then the other thing that it struck in me is we've had this situation for years about Randy Savage not getting in the Hall of Fame. And a few years ago, he had died under tragic circumstances. And it saddens me as a Randy Savage fan that he never got that moment that the Ultimate Warrior did.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great comparison. A lot of people have been bringing that up. And, you know, there's the controversy around Savage in regards to why he hasn't been inducted. And, well, you can search Google if you want to try to find that out. But it's now been said that he's passed his estate in regards to his, I guess, his persona and permission to be inducted into the Hall of Fame is somehow in the hands of Lanny Poffo, his brother. And Poffo has stated that Randy always said that if he was going into the Hall of Fame, he wanted it to be as a family and not as an individual. Thus, that would mean inducting Lanny, Randy, and their father, Angelo, into the Hall of Fame. And, I mean, I think it's going to happen eventually, but it's unfortunate that you don't get to hear that one final, yeah, or perhaps Condominium on the Moon promo from Randy.
Oh, very nice. Working the blog in. I appreciate
that. There you go. Yeah, yeah.
That's good. This man, professional broadcaster, the whole nine yards. But one of the other things I wanted to chat with you about is, on the law, Triple H has never always been treated kindly for some of the things he's done. But recently, this guy's earned a lot of credit, in my mind.
Yep.
What he's done with the developmental system, how he was able to bring back Bruno Sammartino, how he brings back the Warrior with these tragic circumstances, but he was able to get it done. And what will his legacy be in wrestling, do you think? Will we remember Triple H the performer, or at the end of the day, are we going to remember Triple H the guy who's doing the stuff he's doing now?
I don't think you can make that judgment as of yet. Triple H is very early on in his career as one of the driving creative forces of the WWE, but, you know, as Vince McMahon pulls himself away from his control of the organization, we'll see how Triple H and his wife Stephanie run this thing. It was very interesting in the, I believe it was the Forbes magazine article a couple of weeks ago where Vince said that, you know, WWE has grown way beyond his personal vision, and, you know, he hopes that the family business stays as the family business, but made no guarantee of it. So will it stay on? Will it be Triple H and Stephanie running it? Will they be the solo owners? You know, will this go to, will this be sold to a larger organization? Time will tell, you know, who knows? Right now, I agree with you. I think he's doing a great job. Look at the developmental talent that we've had, the Wyatts, the Shield, and the whole development of the Performance Center and NXT, and, you know, this is something that is good for the industry, to a degree. And pushing new talent, the new talent initiative that he's put in place, which is great as well. And even the fact that, you know, he had a great match with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania and jobbed to him. And ultimately, Daniel Bryan got his moment there at WrestleMania and went over Triple H. All of these things are valuable assets, and hopefully, you know, he continues in this light.
And the performer Triple H that we're seeing on screen, I think it's pretty brilliant how he's tapping in to everything that people think about him. Because when you headed into WrestleMania, there was no doubt, and it, maybe for some who are the snarkiest of smart fans, but pretty much everyone believed that Daniel Bryan was going to have his moment and all of that. But then the way Triple H played that up in the weeks leading up to WrestleMania, boy oh boy, he used his persona that is believed on the internet to the fullest, and I think made that match better with himself and Daniel Bryan and the whole rise for Daniel Bryan as a whole.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think that Steph and Triple H are very good characters as authority figures, if you know, that work on screen. And, you know, he gives these little nods to the internet fans here and there during his promos. So far, so good, I would say.
And then one thing we will not agree on is who is the greatest Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion of all time. You will say the Honky Tonk Man. I will say Randy Savage. Where we will agree, though, is that belt is in a state of just terribleness right now. Does the WWE have to do some rehabbing on their championships? That seems to be something that needs to happen, doesn't it?
Well, that belt, the U.S. title, the tag titles, nothing means anything. I mean, they managed to rehab the heavyweight championship by having CM Punk hold it for a year and be put in a very prominent spotlight, but that was also one of my issues with the streak being gone. The streak was the one thing in professional wrestling that meant something. The one and only thing, perhaps. And, it's gone. And now, you know, your draw is your heavyweight title, as it should be, but, you know, we'll see how much that means. Championships, the Intercontinental and the U.S. title have not meant anything for a very, very long time, and neither of the tag titles. And it's sad, and I don't quite understand why they don't make them more prominent, but if you look at the Intercontinental title recently, if I was a performer, I wouldn't want it, because as soon as you get that title, you're buried.
Yeah, it doesn't go well for you. It's like you now have a license that, oh, it's okay for this guy to lose. And
yep.
It's just never, like, when you think back to the days of the Intercontinental Championship, that was a big deal. One of the greatest
yep.
matches of WrestleMania history was Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat.
Yep.
And it meant a ton, and we just don't see that anymore.
You know, you look at guys like Savage and then Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, who are all guys who had the IC title and that led them to the title. Hey, Ultimate Warrior, as we spoke about him, another guy, same deal there, Intercontinental title and then into heavyweight title. So, you know, it used to mean a lot, and even the tag titles did as well. And Michaels and Hart are great examples of that, going from the Hart Foundation and the Rockers. They have the tag titles. They break off from their partners. Then they get the Intercontinental title. They held that for a while, lose it, go on to be in the main event, win the championship, and are major stars. That format is not in place whatsoever anymore.
No, it isn't. Jimmy Corderas, who was my guest last week, had an interesting idea. And it kind of, I mentioned that it almost plays off that crossover you have between UFC and WWE, but is it time to maybe bring back rankings for titles again, like they used to do in the old days, back in the magazines and stuff like that?
Jeez, I don't even remember that. I wasn't a big magazine guy, but yeah, I mean, the UFC has put that in place, and if they want to follow suit, they can. The rankings are a bit of a joke, but if it seems like there's some importance, then maybe that could be a nice gimmick for a while if presented properly. You know, anything can work. It all just matters on execution.
Yeah, because I know you're not a fan of what of ROH based on their production values and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I've watched their product, and the one thing I do like about their product, Adam Cole and their World Heavyweight title drives that company. That's
right.
What every storyline builds to or is based around, and that's how the WWE used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you, and yeah, I also agree with you with ROH's production values, so there you go.
Well, no, I just know you always say that about ROH, and it's true, and
yeah.
But at the same time, I think the product they're putting on is pretty interesting. With the wrestling business as a whole, this launch of the network, and everyone just seems to think it's on an upswing. Are you hopeful that wrestling is on that upswing? Do you see what people are seeing right now based on, I mean, the product has been good, but then the numbers came out for the WWE Network. They weren't horrible, but they weren't great. And it seems like at the end of 2014, whatever happens, we're going to have a clear indication of where the wrestling business is heading.
I don't see this upswing. I see it as, you know, status quo. Wrestling's not in the dumpster that it was in the early 90s where you were dealing with, you know, all the cartoon doink characters and Razor Ramon and Kevin Nash or Diesel at the time. You know, it's not quite back in the lean years, as I like to call them, but it's by no means an attitude era, you know, popularity level at this point. And for that matter, you know, neither is UFC. UFC is down this year as well due to a transference of their stars and the loss of Georges St-Pierre and Anderson Silva, and they're just trying to ride out Ronda Rousey and put together a match with Gina Carano now as their big draw this year. But I don't see either one of them at the top of their game at the moment.
Well, we can be hopeful, though, because as wrestling fans, we always have to have hope. That is one thing I have learned over the years.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, as wrestling fans, we're going to be there. We're going to be watching. Those booms are caused by, you know, an influx of popular culture and wrestling being deemed cool and being deemed that some people are going to watch, like what happened in 99 or what happened during the Hulkamania era. And that's not here right now, and I don't see a star at the moment that is going to break through to mainstream culture. I mean, as much as you want to say Cena did, he didn't really. The Rock did, of course, but The Rock did in the Attitude Era and then went from there. I don't see anyone that's about to do that, and I don't see the product as the hot product it once was, where it was penetrating into pop culture.
The WWE would have you believe Daniel Bryan is that guy, though.
Yeah, well, the WWE would have you believe a lot of things that aren't true.
That's true, but what do you see for his run with this title as he's now got the belt? And actually, I had called in on the law and mentioned this. That was never my concern. My concern is what happens now with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it looks like what they're aiming to do right now is align him with the Shield and have him face off against Triple H, Orton, and Batista. I thought they were going to push towards Batista and Daniel Bryan, and I could see that program coming about, a kind of David and Goliath thing, because Batista is so large, and they have him there, and it's a fresh program. Orton and Bryan is a dead program. Like, it's just, we've seen it too many times. So I think that's kind of where they're going. I hope Daniel Bryan keeps it for a while. He deserves it. He's exciting. The crowd is behind him. It's time to give him a run, and I do think one of the best things they did recently with the title was have CM Punk keep it for an extended period of time. It makes the title mean more when you do that. So I don't like the hot-shotting of the title, and last year was pretty painful with Bryan getting it 24 hours later, being taken away with the dusty finishes and stuff, or Randy Orton holding it as a dead champion. You know, nobody really cared about Randy Orton. So let's let Bryan hold on to it for a while and make him a strong champion, because he does need that.
And we've mentioned him a couple times in this program. CM Punk is pretty much dead now as far as he goes, I think. Didn't come back in Chicago, didn't come back at WrestleMania. Whenever he does come back, if he comes back, he can come back as a monster heel, though, could he not?
Oh,
Why would you say heel first? I would say he comes back as a monster babyface first. The fans will just absolutely adore him.
But you could easily have him come back and have Daniel Bryan, who has become the fans' darling, as we both would agree, and say, that should have been me.
Yeah, but I think that you would have the fans torn. I think the same people that like Daniel Bryan are the same people that like CM Punk. So, I mean, this is nothing that's going to happen soon, so the wrestling world will be totally different by the time CM Punk rolls back in, if he does roll back in. I think he will eventually, but it could be 2-3 years down the line. If you were to do that right now, I think that would be a mistake. I think that, you know, an alignment of Punk and Bryan, the anti-authority alignment, would be your best route. I mean, then you can play up Punk is the babyface, and fans already enjoy Punk, and the internet people see him as one of their darlings as well, and would want to see that Triple H Punk feud that we never did get to see. So I would say, first of all, even though, believe me, I like Punk better as a heel, I think that he cuts a mean promo and his personality works better, but I think when he comes back, ultimately, it's a babyface run first.
Well, we will see, and this was a fun conversation. I had a great time talking with you, and thanks so much, and you know, you can catch The Law every Sunday night on TSN 1050 with Jason Agnew and Dan the Mouth Levransky, and you know, all the different podcasts. Anything you need to promote or would like to promote, obviously The Law has got their new T-shirts and all that.
Oh yeah, we do. That's right, at prowrestlingtees.com/law. But you can just follow me on Twitter at Agnew Jason, and I post up all my various, you know, TV and radio work up there, where you can hear me and see me, etc.
And one last thing, you have been able to have like kind of this separate career aside from The Law, and that's been something that I admire, because I'm starting off doing like something new with the wrestling, and to be able to keep something else going for yourself on the side, that's obviously great for you and a great feather in your cap.
Well, you know, to be honest, The Law is the side gig, right? I mean, The Law is, it's Sunday nights and it's a great time, and I've been doing it for it's my longest running job, but in actuality, I mean, I'm a TV host and producer, and, you know, I'm on Splatalot on YTV, and I just signed the deal and just filmed the brand new season of Tiny Talent Time for CHCH. So that's kind of my main gig, and then it's just, I know my Sunday nights are reserved for professional wrestling and going on hanging out with my friends and chatting with all you guys.
It sounds good, and thanks so much for doing this, and it was a pleasure. As a longtime fan of the program, I appreciate it a lot, and we got title bout trivia on the MMA Hour this week. That was fantastic.
On the MMA Hour with Helwani?
Yes, that happened.
Oh, I have not seen this as of yet. Oh, my goodness.
This happened because...
Pollock is stealing my gimmicks?
No. It had nothing to do with Pollock. When I was in the finals on Title Bout Trivia, the fact that I shouted out New York Rick...
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, I hear you now. Okay. I thought, because Pollock was on the MMA Report this past Monday, and I thought he went on and quizzed Ariel or something like that.
No.
You have to straighten those two guys out.
No. And John Pollock is on the current edition of the MMA Hour as well, so go check that out. But yes, you yourself, myself, on the MMA Hour. So there we go.
All right, cool.
All right, thanks a lot for this, Jason. It was a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully you can come back and do it again, or maybe we can convince John Pollock or one of those other guys to come on.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, James. Talk to you later, bud.
There we go. That was Mr. Agnew, and great fun talking with him. Of course, he being the ultimate fan of the Honky Tonk Man, me and Randy Savage, but it worked out to be a great interview nonetheless.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Well, there you go. And now we're going to get into kind of the aftermath of all that happened at WrestleMania on the next night, Raw. First and foremost, when you talk about the night after Raw, the crowd. These people are just absolutely phenomenal, over the top, best crowd. They are, I mentioned this in something I wrote this week, they have become the measuring stick for what all crowds are based on for the rest of the year. And this actual Raw, I think, has become kind of the holy grail for wrestling fans now. It's not just going to WrestleMania, it's going to the Raw the night after.
Yeah, they get a lot of the carryover from the fans who went to WrestleMania. It's almost predominantly like an overseas crowd. You get a lot of European fans, people who flew in to see the show. And, yeah, man, like the crowd was absolutely fantastic. They were popping for everything. And last year we saw the birth of Fandangoing. And that was Fandango rode that momentum for quite a bit. We almost saw the debut of something else, something that probably a lot of people didn't pick up on. The fans were humming the theme of the Real Americans.
Yeah, they're doing that now too, and they're singing. He's got the whole world in his hands for Bray Wyatt. You know, there's lots of stuff going on, and they're still Fandangoing.
Yeah, they still were. It's not as nearly as big as it was a year ago.
Oh, no, they're sticking it to Triple H because he said that was just a fad. No, no, Fandangoing is still happening. It's still going on. Oh, it's just his career that isn't going on, but the Fandangoing, it will live forever.
Hey, fans can make someone overnight, and something as small as just pointing your arms in the air and just humming a theme song can put a guy over big, but... Yeah, Fandango isn't, you know, on anyone's radar anymore, but I wonder if the Real Americans thing will catch on. I don't know if Cesaro will even keep that theme anymore. Maybe it'll just stick to Swagger, but I thought it was kind of catchy.
Before we get to what happened with Mr. Cesaro, let's get into one of the themes of this show, which was NXT was front and center on this Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania. The guy who everyone expected in the Battle Royal ends up debuting on Raw the next night. Rusev in a match with Zack Ryder. And of the four NXT competitors that we get introduced to on Raw here, this was the flattest to me. I just thought, oh, really? They put him in there with Zack Ryder? Like, that's supposed to get this guy heat? Do people even care about Zack Ryder anymore? I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Zack Ryder was the right guy. I would have put someone in there with a lot more credibility because I think the WWE wants to give Alexander Rusev a major push. Whenever I watch him in the ring, I always think that he's kind of like Samoa Joe, but Samoa Joe in shape, if that makes sense. No disrespect to him, but he uses a lot of kicks. He's a suplex machine. I actually like him. I mean, I really like Lana. I mean, let's be honest, everyone loves Lana, but... Yeah, I have high hopes for him. I think he could be someone. He can be kind of a fringe main eventer, upper mid card kind of guy. And he wasn't the only NXT guy. We saw a couple of video packages for some up and comers that we might see on television in the coming weeks. Adam Rose and Bo Dallas.
Okay, hold on. I'm just scratching future guests. Samoa Joe. No. All right. So, yes, Adam Rose and Bo Dallas got their vignettes. I thought of the two of them, Adam Rose is way more cooler, way more awesome. And this gimmick, the WWE, they clearly love it. It was on the actual NXT show this week, too, which I just got finished watching today.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is over, and in ring, Adam Rose is not going to blow you away. It is formerly Leo Kruger, for people who have followed along on NXT. I'm not digging him in the ring yet, but boy, oh boy, he can get a lot of mileage with that entrance and just the goofiness of that, and the in-ring can come along as it goes. Like, hopefully, the ideal thing, I guess, would be that just when people are starting to get a little sick of the entrance, his in-ring starts to match the level of the entrance. Because I think right now, it's a cool gimmick and it's an entrance. Till, you know, we see more from him in the ring, that's what I think it is. But good enough that it'll get him over and give him a little bit of leeway to get a good start if they do it right.
Yeah, he's never going to be the biggest stars. He's probably going to be like a replacement in the comedy aspect of maybe like a Santino Marella, where he's just kind of, he's fun to watch, but you never take him too seriously. I mean, if you watch some of his matches as of late on NXT, the man doesn't even really have a legitimate finishing move. I think he had like a choo-choo clothesline, and then he had like a kind of a semi-elbow drop off the top rope, which isn't going to really work. So, but the entrance is fantastic. He actually switched his entrance music, which kind of disappointed me, from the first night he debuted. So I hope they kind of go back to that, where he does like the woo thing, and I thought that could get over with the fans. But yeah, Adam Rose definitely has some staying power for sure.
Ric Flair, claim gimmick infringement there. It's gone. It's out. But the total opposite, I think, for Bo Dallas. I think Bo Dallas has become one heck of an in-ring competitor, and I think I like the kind of Justin Bieber-ish gimmick he has. I think it'll play out well. I'm not sure I like these vignettes, and I hope they aren't altering the character too much from what we're seeing on NXT, because he's just brilliant in that role. Like, he came out on NXT this week, and he was going to give this speech, and he was going to demand another shot at the NXT title, and the fans turn their backs on him, and he gets all upset, and he goes, "But I brought you cookies," and he's almost crying. I mean, this guy has taken this gimmick, and at first I hated it. I love it now, and I think if they can get this over with how much Justin Bieber is in the news, this is a winning formula for Bo Dallas, because that's basically what this is. It's a ripoff of Justin Bieber.
Hey, there's some good genes flowing in that family, because for those who aren't aware, he's actually the brother of Bray Wyatt, and we see how successful Bray Wyatt's been. I like Bo Dallas just like you. I think he has a lot of charisma. I hated him when he first made his debut in the company, when he was fighting Wade Barrett on Raw, and he had his little stint in the Royal Rumble. I thought he was too generic. But this gimmick with all of these Bo puns, where he's always he's kind of like he's a heel, but he thinks he's a face. If that makes sense, like
he thinks
love him, and that's what's so funny about it, and that's why the fans, even though they kind of like they give him some grief on NXT, they still love the character, and I think this is going to get over on the main roster as kind of a mid card heel, which the company needs some fresh faces in that role.
Well, love him or hate him, people react to him, and that's the point. I mean, John Cena says a lot of hokey things, but one of the things I do agree with him,
mm-hmm.
whether or not people cheer or boo. The fact that they react is the main thing. If they're not reacting to you at all, you've got a huge problem. But whether they boo, whether they cheer, whether they bow, it doesn't really matter. And in all honesty, at the end of this gimmick, because it is going to play out its course, I don't think this gimmick can last the long standing of time unless Justin Bieber does, which would be horrible for the world. But assuming that isn't the case, I almost have the way out of it, too, because you could almost have his brother, in reality, come and brainwash Bo and make him part of the Wyatt family.
Oh, God.
So
we're jumping the gun there, but yeah, it would make
sense. But no, it is a natural transition that we see these two brothers either team or feud at some point. I think that's a natural.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to see it anyway.
And then I think the most anticipated NXT arrival that actually didn't come off as well as people might have hoped,
mm-hmm.
we get to see AJ Lee come out and brag about her Divas title win that we spoke about before the interview with Jason Agnew, and her 200 and what was it, 95 days?
It was 295, yes.
The best diva in the world, which, of course, got what?
What?
CM Punk chance, of course.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Her fiance.
The best diva in the world. Apparently, you get that with the engagement ring. But then, to the surprise of many, out comes Paige to a pretty fair reaction, because this is your smartest crowd of the year. So guess what? They watch NXT. They know who Paige is. And AJ Lee calls her a cute little crumpet, slaps her in the face, says, "You know what? I'm feeling in such a good mood. I'm going to give you a match, and it's going to be for my Divas title." And, oh my gosh, this ends up with Paige getting the page turner, and AJ Lee's title reign is done, and Paige is not only the NXT Women's Champion, she's now the Divas Champion, and the youngest champion ever to hold a women's title in the WWE.
And she's also the youngest champion ever, because she's the first champion to be born in the 1990s. which just shows how old me and you are getting, man. But
Thanks a lot. That really made me feel good. But
hey,
go
I'm
on.
Old too. I'm in the same boat, man.
No, you're not as old as me. Let's face it. Everyone on this program knows that.
All right. Well, I apologize, James. It didn't mean to hurt your feelings. But if you check the Twitter account, I want everyone to check my Twitter. Go back to Monday Night Raw. I called this. I called Paige being out there. As soon as they said before the commercial break, AJ's going to come out to the ring and she's going to address the WWE Universe. I'm like, there is no way they're giving a diva a segment to talk on the microphone, even if it's AJ Lee, unless they're going to have someone debut. And in my head, it was either Paige or they were going to bring back Karma. And she's lost a lot of weight, and I think apparently they're going to be calling her back soon. So, but Paige, like you said, the fans were smart. They know who this girl was. She's been on, now that NXT is on the WWE Network, a lot more fans get to see her. The only thing that bothered me with this title change was the finish was botched. I mean, when she put the page turn on AJ, she didn't take it the right way. She kind of landed late. But, you know, who cares? Paige is the Divas champion, thank God, because I love AJ, and that she's the best diva in a long, long time. But after she basically steamrolled through the entire division in one night at WrestleMania, they needed someone to come up and challenge this girl. Whether it was the right move to put the title on Paige the first time around remains to be seen, but I like that we kind of just get a fresh face with the belt, and hopefully there's some more legs behind a Paige and AJ Lee feud.
I've been saying for a couple of years that AJ Lee is so far ahead of the rest of this Divas roster, and she is just begging to have her Trish Stratus or her Lita.
Uh-huh.
This has the potential to be that, because both these girls are young enough to have a good long run, and it's a feud that I think we can always come back to, just like they did with Trish and Lita. Potentially had a horrible start, there's no question about that, but I think this is something that can be long lasting and really be at least the start of building that Divas division, because I think Total Divas and all that, that does its own rating, it draws its own audience, but I don't think that audience comes over to Monday Night Raw.
Right. WWE Total Divas has its main audience. There's certain demographic that tune in on Sundays and watch the show, but the smart fans like me and yourself, I mean, we can appreciate someone who is a legitimate worker in the ring. And Paige is, we didn't really see it on Monday, but I've seen a lot of her NXT matches with Summer Rae and Emma. The girl can go. And the only thing that, brings some doubt to my mind is that her gimmick is kind of similar to AJ's. They're both the anti-diva, so to speak. They're just kind of like, they're not mainstream. They don't have the blonde hair like, some of the girls on the show, or they don't have like the insane bodies or what have you, but they can both wrestle. They both can draw a reaction from the fans, and that's good enough for me. And, Paige is a looker. I really like Paige, and I think she can become, like you said, kind of the Lita or the Trish Stratus to AJ Lee.
And you never know. I mean, there's no reason that these two can't have a feud and at some point come together. We saw that with Trish and Lita at times, too, where they were both on the same page and did things as a duo. So that's possible, too. But I think they are the best hope for the Divas division, because, quite frankly, the rest of the Divas division, you can say what you want about Natty Neidhart, you can say what you want about the one girl in the Funkadactyls and all the rest of it. There is just a huge discrepancy from the level of performer AJ Lee is and the rest of that Divas division. And I mean that in the sense of AJ Lee is the total package. She can go in the ring. Yeah, maybe she's not as good a wrestler as Natty Neidhart, but guess what? On the microphone, she kills her and owns her and has become legitimately, and I'm not even kidding when I say this, she's probably top five on the mic in this company as a female. Mm-hmm. And that's saying something.
Yeah, it's a shame they didn't kind of build off of that promo she cut during the summer where she put down the Total Divas. You can't even lace up my Chuck Taylors. I mean, I think she mentioned that on Monday Night Raw, that promo of hers. But, yeah, Paige isn't nearly in her class either. And, like you said, Natty Neidhart isn't. And, I mean, who is really the AJ Lee? But, yeah, I'm looking forward to this newfound competition. There's like a sign of life in the Divas division that's just been kind of an afterthought. And Paige, she's not saving it, but she's certainly helping it.
Well, you know, and in the ring, Paige can go. Like, I think the microphone skills, AJ Lee can carry her along, but in ring, she can certainly go, and is very good. Another guy who can go in the ring, he's pretty strong. He's the winner of the first ever Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He is Cesaro, and boy, oh boy, if you want a shock of the night, I think this was it, because Antonio Cesaro comes out there to get his trophy once again from the Hawkster, the Hulkster, who was in New Orleans, and he actually knew it on this night. Congratulations, Hulk. And he does his little stick, gets out of the way. Zeb takes the microphone from Cesaro and declares that, you know, Cesaro is a Zeb Coulter guy. And Cesaro grabs the mic back, and he says, well, you know what? That's not exactly true. I'm a Paul Heyman guy.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
And the crowd goes mental. Out comes Paul Heyman and walks his way down to the ring, says, "Get out of the way, Grandpa," to Zeb, and it was on like Donkey Kong.
Oh, man.
The segment ends up with, of course, Jack Swagger coming down, hitting Cesaro from behind, smashing the trophy, and eventually ends up in a match between the two. One of the funniest, well, everything with Paul Heyman is funny, but the fact that Paul Heyman takes the remnants of this Andre the Giant trophy, the one-legged Andre the Giant, and is clutching it like it was his baby, just fantastic stuff. The King of Swing is born, as says Hustle Heyman, and wow, this is a great pairing.
I'm so excited about this, and it makes sense because, I mean, Brock Lesnar's probably going to take a couple of months off, like his contract probably allows him to. Paul Heyman isn't just going to sit around and do nothing, so put him with a guy who's one of the fastest rising stars in the company right now. I love Cesaro, and it's not only because I'm Swiss and he's Swiss. I just love the way he works in the ring. I've been following him since his days as Claudio Castagnoli, and this is so well-deserved. I mean, all of these big top stars in the WWE have put this guy over, whether it's in interviews or in matches. Like, you know, Randy Orton, he beat Randy Orton before the Elimination Chamber, and he was WWE champion. Then he had an amazing match with John Cena, and now the sky's the limit for this guy, and I really can't wait to see what they do. A match with Jack Swagger at Extreme Rules seems the most likely. And I don't know if they're really going to start pushing him as a heel now because of his alliance with Paul Heyman. But Cesaro isn't the greatest talker, but putting him with Paul Heyman will kind of hide that fact, thank God. But in the end of the day, we're going to see more giant swings. We're going to see more uppercuts, and we're going to see more main event matches. And who knows, maybe somewhere down the road we see Cesaro versus Brock Lesnar. Maybe we even see Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan or whoever the WWE champion is.
At Zeb Coulter, my podcast partner is actually a foreign invader. Sorry, what were you saying? See? There we go.
Being Swiss and Canadian, Zeb Coulter would not like me.
No, you're almost as bad as that Sami Zayn guy.
Yeah, we'll never see that pairing.
You know what? Interesting. He's the one guy that doesn't come up. And probably a lot of people thought he might be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But on NXT, they are saying he has a concussion. I don't know if that's legit or not. I don't know if that's part of this or what. But, you know, Sami Zayn... Actually, you know what? Forget that. It isn't real. Because he was actually wrestling at the NXT portion of the show.
Right. So, well, I mean, I'm not worried about Sam. Like, he'll make his main roster debut soon enough. He's good enough to be on the main roster right now, but there's only so many guys you can bring up at once. I mean, I also think the Ascension, they could really spruce up the tag team division.
They're terrible.
What? You're not high on them?
No, they're... You want to talk about just an entrance? There's just an entrance.
No, I disagree.
Guest on the show today, good thing you were not interviewing him. If you said that to him, he would have, like, gone insane on you.
Jason, why doesn't Jason like the Ascension?
The same reason I don't. They're an entrance and nothing else. They're terrible.
So they're suffering from the Adam Rose syndrome?
But Adam Rose is fun and an entrance and all that. The Ascension is just like something out of the 90s that... Remember Glacier?
Yeah, oh, Glacier. The
That's what they are.
BW.
They're Glacier. Wow. I've just put the curse on them.
No, they're not that bad. I think they have a good combination of size, strength, and, like, technical prowess from Victor. They're not terrible. I don't see why you're that low on them. And you know what? We might see them being paired up with Kane somewhere down the road. So.
Oh, well, that'll help.
Yeah, that'll put them over.
This is why you do not book for the WWE.
Oh, God, yeah. Thank God I'm not in that role. No one would be tuning in to wrestling.
Okay, so what else happened? We had the eerie promo from Warrior, obviously, on this Raw as well, but I don't think we'll get into that. I'm trying to think of anything else significant that happened on this show. Zena was barely on this show.
Yeah, he wasn't, but someone who hasn't wrestled in what seems like forever, Bad News Barrett.
Ah, that's true. And he turned Rey Mysterio heel. How did that happen? Only on the night after WrestleMania can Rey Mysterio be turned heel. Because
well, he was also booed at the Royal Rumble. Let's not forget that.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like that I could understand. This was a little bit more surprising because Wade was about to give his bad news.
Yeah.
And Ray kicks the microphone out of his hand to a chorus of boos, and then he went on a bit of an offensive spree and was booed mightily. So, I don't know. Rey Mysterio's contract is almost up, and I don't see the WWE renewing it. And in fact, for a lot of guys, if you got your contract coming up and you're a guy like a Rey Mysterio or, I don't know, when Kofi Kingston's contract's up or guys like that, be concerned because there's a lot of guys coming up, and this roster is overfilled at the moment.
Yeah, there's going to be some cuts on the horizon. I wouldn't feel safe if I was, I don't know, maybe a JTG or a Curt Hawkins. They should be looking over their shoulders because the NXT roster is very, very deep, and they could easily bring up a bunch of guys whenever they so fit. So, yeah, I wouldn't be too comfortable if I were them.
JTG is never getting fired. Don't say that.
He's untouchable. He must have...
That's the new streak.
He must... Yeah, walk in JTG. That's an awesome streak. I love it.
That's the new streak. JTG's employment. But no, in all seriousness, you should be worried if you're on this roster and you're just hanging around. And one of the things I noticed... on NXT this week, a couple guys kind of getting demoted to NXT.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Brodus Clay on NXT challenging the NXT champion, Adrian Neville, and we also saw Kali down there. Although Kali, I think it was one of those one-off things, but we'll see. But Brodus Clay, definitely not a one-off if he's challenging the champion. I think it means he's going to stick around. And, you know, there's a guy who, God... A year ago at WrestleMania or a couple years ago, he was over.
Yeah.
He had all his mamas out there dancing. That was 2 years ago, and then his match got cut, and now he's down on NXT.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing with this guy. He has great size. He's pretty mobile for a big man, but there's just nothing there right now. And why not put him in NXT? They're obviously not using him on television unless it's like the occasional Superstars match or whatever, and I thought he was going to be pushed to the limit, you know, when he broke up with Tensai, but then that kind of faltered out. He's like, I'm a main event player, and, you know, he had kind of a generic, you know, I'm the best and you're not kind of gimmick, but yeah, put him in NXT, leave him there for a bit and see if he can get something out of him, and then bring him up when he's relevant again.
Speaking of Tensai, a.k.a. Jason Albert, he was not exactly stellar on commentary on NXT this week. But with Alex Riley sitting beside him, he can only look better because Alex Riley's terrible.
Yeah.
That being said, that wraps up just about everything from a really busy week in the world of wrestling. But like I said, you know, be on the lookout because it looks like this roster is just full to the max, and it's going to be tough. I mean, we didn't even get into all these guys that are rumored to be coming into NXT that have had good tryouts for the WWE. Competition has never been more fierce on this roster than I think it is right now.
It's the dawning of a new era in world wrestling entertainment. It makes for some exciting television. It makes for some even more exciting podcasts from the two of us because there's just so much to talk about these days. A lot of these old-timers are getting pushed out of the way, and we're seeing a lot of young guys getting put in those top spots, just like we saw on Raw, the ending with The Shield and Daniel Bryan standing tall. I mean, I've never been this happy with the way things are going with WWE, and I can't wait to see what the next couple of weeks and months unfold, how things are going to play out.
But the key is they've got to get all the people that used to be wrestling fans to buy into this, and I'm not sure who the guy is to do that or how they do that, because while the talent is all there, you've got to bring people to the dance and let them know it's there, because wrestling definitely seems to be ready to take another leap talent-wise in the next little while. But if the people aren't watching and you don't get those casual fans invested in this, then it all doesn't mean a heck of a lot.
Right. Well, we'll see how that plays out, because I think they recently had the WWE Network numbers come out, and it wasn't as high as they had originally hoped. They were hoping to be hovering around the million mark, but it was in the high 600,000. So, and then the stock prices have been coming down too. So everything's not peaches and cream with the company right now. But they're really going to have to start throwing some stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
So, in the words of Bo Dallas, don't stop believing. Hold on to that feeling.
Ow!
Yeah, I'll never sing on the show again. So mark that down. Episode 6, James sang, and kind of fitting with Jason Agnew, who is a lover of karaoke, who was our special guest. So I did a little singing last week. We yessed. Who knows what crazy thing we'll do next week? Tune in, find out. We may even have another guest, so you never know.